discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, and Chuck Wolbers, a transition and work experience teacher in the special education department at Tremper High School, also in Kenosha. Now, here is today's Education Matters moderator.
Good morning. Welcome to Education Matters. I'm your host for this week. My name is Mike Kehoe. And with me today are Eitan Batzakian, principal at Hillcrest School, and Dan Tenuta is principal of Kenosha East School, and Chris Shane works with them. He's from Professional Services Group. Good morning.
Good morning.
Why don't we start by asking each of you to state something about your mission, the students that you serve, and why you serve them.
Okay.
Eitan.
This is Eitan Benzikin. I'm the principal over at Hillcrest, and I think our mission would probably be to help. We work in collaboration with Chris, who will be probably next, and in making sure that the students and families that are having challenges and needs and difficulties in life, how do we work together to make sure that they become successful in school and after school? And so that's our mission.
I would certainly agree with that. I think a key component of our mission is really to have this holistic approach to really deal not just with the kids that we work with, but with the families, to get them what they need, the services that they need to be successful as a family. If parents are successful, their kids are successful, and they do well academically. And so I think that's always part of our mission. So,
okay. Dan?
At Kenosha East School, our mission is to provide the students and families of Kenosha Unified with an alternative instructional approach based upon online learning. So it's a digital format where students are able to take courses without having to come in face-to-face and meeting with a teacher, but can take the courses totally online. So we do that all the way from kindergarten through grade 12. We have full-time student options where students can be fully at home and take courses throughout the whole day and get their entire curriculum. We have part-time options for students that can't get a course at one of their high schools, so they could take a class that doesn't fit into their schedule. We provide support for our school district through students that may need an alternative setting, that things aren't going well at the brick-and-mortar schools, so they can come to us for a period of time. So we provide a whole vast array of support for Kenosha Unified School kids by using digital learning or an online learning format.
Okay. It's interesting. I was thinking as you were saying that Isaac Asimov, back in the late 50s, wrote a science fiction story about that described what you described exactly. And predicted it. So sometimes science fiction is accurate. Eitan, how does a student get into your program?
There's two ways that a student's – there's a few ways that a student is identified at risk or in need. There's kids that are either not doing well, generally general ed kids that are not doing well, have made a poor choice, and they go in front of a committee called ARC, and Dan is the chair of that, so he could probably speak more about that. And then ARC can recommend out of their array that Hillcrest is appropriate for this student. Usually they do have DCFS, which is Chris can talk more about that, that is working with them. The next way is that if a student has special needs and is usually tends to be violent or have some difficulties behaviorally, they can be screened, and the screening committee is made up of Chris, myself, DCFS Sarah Ortiz or Donna Rhodes, and the Karin Walters, who's the Reuther principal. And we take – that screening committee takes kids from school or kids that have been in foster homes or out-of-home placements, and we listen to their story and decide if Hillcrest is a good fit for them. And with the idea and the lens of really Hillcrest is a partnership between CIP, DCFS, and KUSD to kind of wrap around the students and the parents to be successful. So that's kind of the criteria of when we're thinking of who would fit into Hillcrest.
Dan, would you like to say something about that ARC?
The ARC is the Administrative Review Committee, and what it basically is a group of educators that take a look at all of the incidents within Kenosha Unified School District that are considered expellable offenses or offenses that through board policy is seen as that a student could possibly be expelled from the school district. And so we review that case based on some criteria. First of all, whether or not it legitimately meets that criteria is one case. And then also to see if there's any special needs that the student needs to have met that hasn't been met already, so that that needs to be provided before we would do something as severe as having an expulsion of a student. We review all those cases and then make recommendations. The vast majority of those recommendations, we recommend there's an abeyance to the expulsion process, and there it comes to an alternative placement for the student. It may be something that they would be placed over in the Bridges side of the Hillcrest program. They perhaps would come over to Kenosha E-School and spend a time away from the brick and mortar, away from the situation that they came in there. So it's really a place to be thoughtful about how we would address those expellable type of offenses that kids will have. And it's primarily kids in grades in the middle school and in the high school.
So at that point, they come over to you, ITAN, and do you do an intake process of your own, or is that part of the ARC?
We do an intake process, although we've already at that point facilitate some communication with DCFS, just looking to see if the kid or if there's services already around this kid. But yeah, we'll do an intake process where we'll meet with the parents and the student and any social workers that are involved and really kind of get to the process of what is the difficulties that are being had and what is occurring, and then making some plans and some goals. And then CIP also does an intake at that time.
Yeah, I mean, we look at some of the same things that ATON's staff look at, but we also really delve into that family component to see what other services are needed. You know, a lot of the kids that we have, their parents haven't valued education necessarily. It hasn't been as important, and part of that might be because they have an alcohol or drug issue, a mental health difficulty of some kind, or you know what, it may be economic difficulties. So we want to make sure that we're able to get them the services that they need in order, again, to kind of prop the family up, because all the kids are going to do better if that family's doing better. So,
and Hillcrest is a very special place in that the wraparound services, DCFS, CIP, he just talked about, they're in the school. So we have seven counselors, three on each side. The time side is the screening committee, and the bridge side is the ARC committee that really wrap around the services. So if in-home family therapy or if activities outside of school are being had, we have the counselors that are doing those things inside of our school at the same time. And on Wednesdays, we all sit around the table, all the services together, and discuss the student both inside the school and outside the school and really plan accordingly. So it's a very special place that all the services are really in one location.
Yeah, and I would, you know, absolutely agree with that. You know, the thing about Hillcrest is it's been around since the mid-80s. People don't really realize that, and it's a unique collaboration between the Division of Children and Family Services, our agency, Community Impact Programs, and Kenosha Unified. In the mid-80s, that wasn't happening anywhere. And there were even, you know, there were districts from different states who came in and took a look mm-hmm. at Hillcrest and said, wow, what you guys are doing is really unique and helpful to the students and the families that you're working with. And even in Racine, they actually came in last year. They were altering their alternative programming a bit. They came in the Hillcrest and said, hey, what are you guys doing? We know this is working. It's really effective for your students. And now they have a program modeled after ours in Racine. So it says a great deal about how long this has been happening and the success that's been had over the years. So,
I'm impressed with the emphasis on the social aspect mm-hmm. of it, because from what I see from my standpoint in middle schools for the last several years is that there's an enormous focus on academic achievement, but those of us in the special education unit, we kind of view it as the primary goal mm-hmm. is to get them through the social adjustment of middle school. And that's why middle school is such a dramatic place.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, and I think Hillcrest and eSchool, too, does a great job of slowing things down and saying, okay, well, let's focus not just on academics, although that's important, and we have those at Hillcrest, we have that at eSchool, but let's also focus on the behaviors and what kind of interventions, what kind of strategies we have. We have Girl Circle and anger management and weight and ARC and all these different programs around how to give them the strategies they need in order to be successful going back. And we think of transition back just as much as we think of transition coming in.
Yeah, students can make up for, as young adults, for example, they can make up for academic deficiencies when they get out of the school system. But they can make mistakes while they're adolescents that will close lots of doors for them as adults.
Definitely.
It sounds like you do a lot of direct instruction, at least small group instruction. And, Dan, I would think that what you're doing is probably the ultimate, at eSchool, the ultimate direct instruction.
Yeah, the instructional approach for eSchool is that obviously, all the students are doing their courses away from the building, so they're doing it online. And actually, it's a very personalized instructional approach. So, for instance, each student works at a different pace, so they'll communicate with the teacher either through online or over the phone. They have office hours where kids can come in and get help. And so, really, each student that comes in there, there's no need to all be at the same place at the same time. If you want to move faster, you can move faster. And sometimes if there's situations where prevents you from working for a few days, a lot of the students will have maybe a medical issue or something that prevents them from being at a face-to-face brick-and-mortar school every day. They can take an online class. Then you can make up for that work. You can work on maybe one section or one subject area as much as you want on one day and then maybe do a couple more the next. And so that flexibility pieces in there, and also that personalization in terms of your pacing. Now, ultimately, if you're a ninth grader and start, you know, 4 years from now, we want you to be done with all of your credits and graduate on time. So it's not that there isn't a pacing recommendation for all the courses. And, you know, kids are very clear about what their pacing are to complete courses. But it really does fit a very it provides a flexibility that really fits the needs of a lot of kids at times. So it's really a nice enhancement for a curriculum choice and an instructional choice for kids in Kenosha Unified.
So it's somewhat different than the Plato program that we had at Reuther for a while, where you had a room with computers and you had one or two teachers in there who were kind of renaissance people and mentors who would help people over.
Yeah, the Accelerated Independent Study program was really based on the fact that students came for a particular period of time. Actually, it was flipped from that, is that the students could only work once they actually came to Reuther and started to working. This is the opposite. Kids don't come in to work. They work independently at home. So now as far as the curriculum is concerned, the online classes as far as the flexibility in terms of what type of choices kids can make as far as working on assignments is really based on how the course is set up. But the teacher can alter the curriculum for students. They can provide enrichment activities for them, and so they'll put those right into the courses. So all the courses are very rigorous courses. They're all paced out. They're very, very good classes to have. So we'll have students that take advanced placement courses online. We'll have kids that need extra help. We'll need to have extended time to do, say, maybe a math class instead of taking it for a quarter, can take it for over a semester period of times because they need more time on that subject area.
So it kind of in all these programs, you're taking the kids who are having difficulty away from the dramatic situations that they're in to an environment, whether it's a cerebral environment or a physical environment, where they can focus just on their learning. Is that right?
Definitely. I'd also add that, you know, Dan, very smart, you know, not too long ago, about a year ago, said, listen, there are some kids that are going to e-school that have some behavior issues that would also benefit from some of the programs that we offer at Hillcrest. And we collaborated together to create what's called a HERO program, but it's really a Hillcrest e-school rehabilitation opportunity. Basically, the kids that need some anger management or some help with an instructor around social-emotional interventions and strategies come over a couple times a week to Hillcrest and get those groups and are in those groups. So it's very nice to have that the kid that might have done something expellable not only takes a little break from a brick-and-mortar school, but also gets some of the strategies that they need going back to the brick-and-mortar school.
Okay, so how many students do you have in a typical class?
We try to keep them low numbers at the school, typically anywhere from 6 to 12 students per class is what we try to keep it to. And because kids are coming there with an understanding, we all have an understanding that we're going to service them, but it's a temporary placement. There's somewhat of a mobility rate where kids might be there for a year or a year and a half, and they come in whenever they've done either an offense or they're coming back from foster care or from an out-of-home placement. So it can be in the middle of a year, middle of a quarter, middle of a semester. And so the idea is that we think about the transition for them going back as much as we do anything else, and we keep that in the forefront as we build a schedule when they come in and build a plan for them both academically and behaviorally. So with that in mind, we're collaborating with the other schools or the next placement that we think they're going to be at and making sure that they're involved in their case and in their lives, whether that's having other schools come in and visit with them or just emailing other services or other staff members at the other schools. This is the kid that we're working in. This is our plan. This is what we're going forward with, and keeping them apprised of that. And then CIP also offers people in the other schools to hand off.
Yeah, we actually have, as we're talking about alternative education, we have a school liaison program, and that's a collaboration between the school district, the Division of Children and Family Services, and Community Impact, where we actually have liaisons in the schools. In four of the high schools, the four major high schools, we have a liaison in each of those schools, and then three of the middle schools, we have a liaison in each of those schools. And the liaisons work with kids who have truancy and behavioral issues, but oftentimes when kids come from Hillcrest and they transition back to a school, they've come from a school where we have 100 kids. Now they're going back into a school oftentimes where there might be 700 or, you know, 2,000. So they really need that added support. So oftentimes a referral referral is made to those school liaisons. So they check in with those kids every day. They visit with the families on a weekly basis. We bring parents back and forth to teacher conferences because we know how important that parental involvement component is and how well kids do in education. So and they have the ability during the school day to go out. You know, if there are issues, if kids aren't in school, if they're late, they can go out. Where teachers and a lot of people in the schools, they just don't have the ability to leave. Where, you know, we do. We can go out there and we can get the kids and we can find the kids, talk with the parents, find out what's going on, and kind of bring that information and bridge that gap sometimes between home and school. So,
yeah. So I think whether it's Dan or Chris, both of them are always thinking how do we make sure that we're thinking proactively for the students. How, if they're going to go to e-school, well, what are they going to need to be successful? Then how do we get that for them? Whether that's at Hillcrest, whether that's with CIP, whether that's at the Y, we got to somehow collaborate and make sure that the kid's not just dropped off. It's not just, you know, historically, you know, a kid would be expelled and they don't get educated, they don't get services. The mindset is that we need to really focus in on the kids that need the most, and how do we make sure that they get the services and then the education, both in the family, at home, and also in the school setting, so that they can be successful in life.
So you're involved with the students then after school and on weekends and things like that as
well?
Yeah,
absolutely. We're involved with this. And I think that's a key component too. I mean, we're doing activities with the kids. I mean, we do a lot of recreational activities, but structured in nature where there's a social component as well. So we can role model for the kids, but also intervene and kind of help them see, again, what strategies they can use in different situations. A lot of times we do things on the weekends as well because, you know, these are times when kids sometimes are, you know, maybe not involved in a lot of things, and we have to structure their time out of school as well, because if we don't do that, good things don't always happen, and you know, when kids have a lot of time on their hands, particularly with our students, because again, these kids are coming into the building. They have some behavioral issues. They might, have some issues regarding social interactions. So we really try to structure their time the best we can. We even refer them to other agencies, good examples like the Boys and Girls Club here in Kenosha. They have a huge building, biggest building in the Midwest, biggest Boys and Girls Club building in the Midwest, by the way. But great programming for our kids and any kids for that matter. A lot of sports programming, some socially based programming, educational. So we collaborate with them quite a bit with the kids that we have at Hillcrest and some of the other schools as well. And that provides some structure for the kids and gets them involved in something positive that can carry on beyond their time at Hillcrest or beyond their time with community impact programs.
I'm thinking back to when I was a foster parent and had kids attending Hillcrest. Mm-hmm. They were involved in these activities after school and on weekends, mm-hmm. and I would very often get a phone call afterwards, filling me in on how things had been going on, contacting with me as to whether anything was happening in my home that might be relevant to that, mm-hmm. giving me clues as to how to participate. But it was also doing something that I could see was doing something that is on your website as one of the things that you try and do, and that is creating a sense of belonging to a group.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, at Hillcrest, I mean, the whole model of Hillcrest, for example, it's Circle of Courage, and one of the components of that is that sense of belonging. So we're really trying to create that in our programming at Hillcrest and some of the other schools as well. Kids need to feel that. They need to feel like people care about them. And I mean, if you look at all the research out there, kids don't necessarily need 7 or 8 people who they need to look up to, adults in their lives, but they need one. They absolutely positively need one positive role model. So if that's a teacher at Hillcrest, if that's a community impact program staff member, that's great. That's what we want to do. So
I think another could you also mention the summer program? Because I think that's an important program. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, we have a summer youth employment program here in Kenosha. It started about, 7 years ago, maybe 6. And it's relatively unique in the sense that we're actually employing at what we would call at-risk kids, you know, kids who would have a difficult time getting a job, you know, if they walked into McDonald's just because of some of that social skill development isn't quite there yet. But we prep them for the interviews. They're referred by the Division of Children and Family Services, by Hillcrest, by some of the other schools. And it's a great opportunity for them. They work at some county sites. They also work at private employers. And you know, it's on average, we're about 220 kids a year who are employed, and again, all at risk. Most of these kids probably would have a difficult time, but now they have something on their resume, right? They have something on an application. They also have some money in their pocket. They're staying busy. They're doing something productive. You know, it's a great program, and we're very lucky to have it. The county county executive and the county board support this program every year. So, and you know, the crime rate during that time, the juvenile crime rate during that time has gone down about 40%. So you're keeping kids busy and keeping them out of trouble. So,
yeah, I just wanted to, I'm glad that Eitan brought that up because I was involved in terms of that. You know, when it first started up, and it's really remarkable how I think we've lost sight as a community of how important it is to have resources. The example that Chris used in terms of how the delinquency rate, you know, decreased dramatically during the summertime, which usually is the most problematic for the city of Kenosha. And really, if people realize that investing in terms of after-school programs where places are safe for kids can go to do, that that not only will improve, you know, the environment in terms of those direct areas, but it will improve, you know, the environment in all the schools and really is a better thing for the community. So, and that's a perfect example of it, and I think people need to be aware of how successful that is.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, one other thing about that program, too, I think that's really important is, you know, these kids actually end up having to go to a class, too, every week. And so through KUSD's support and their teacher's support, these kids not only have some money in their pocket and get a valuable experience, but they also can earn half a credit. So another great thing. So, again, you know, that whole idea of collaboration, that's one of the things that I've really loved in my 15-some years here in Kenosha is that spirit of collaboration. And I think, you know, it's been a great experience for the youth and families who have been involved in a lot of these programs and in the schools. So.
And then, and especially with this as being an alternative, Ed, that's a perfect example of an alternative way of not only – being benefited by doing you know, involved in the community, you get a high school credit involved as well, and that's an alternative way of getting credit. So that's really, and you know, a really a great example of what alternative ed can do in terms of helping kids.
Yeah, over 100 kids this year moved closer to graduating over the summer that was at risk. That's a powerful statement.
I was going to ask you something about how you handle classroom management at Hillcrest. Because you did indicate that behavior is one of the reasons, one of the major reasons why people get referred there. And in particular, I was thinking of one of the things we used to do when training foster parents as in managing the behavior in their home and that sort of thing. And that was... one of the rules I always had was never react when they expect you to and never react in the way they expect you to, but always have a consequence somewhere.
Right. Yeah, we take the approach for that by really it's a holistic approach of the student oftentimes is acting out because they're trying to communicate something. And we have to get to what they're trying to communicate rather than to deal we want to deal with the behavior, but we want that to be the last thing we deal with. The first thing is we have to get to their need and their what they're communicating. So what we'll do is the teacher or the counselor will meet with the kid that's, you know, that may be misbehaving or doing something – inappropriate. And the first thing we'll start talking about is how are things at home? What's going on? How are you feeling? We're not going to start by talking what happened in the classroom. We're going to start talking about you and making the student feel welcomed and that we care, and we truly do care about the student. Oftentimes that comes what's actually occurring comes out of that, whether they're having a problem at home or they're having a problem with another student. They're very open with that. After we start working on a plan for what happened with the other student or what happened at home. What can we do? What can you do? How can we teach you what you need to do and what we need to do so we can go forward together? And then the last part of it is really honing in on what did you do today and what went wrong? And then how do we make that right? What are the things that we would need to do and plan for? And they need to do that right then and there. So they do an apology, and we sit down and mediate, and we really get to the heart of, because we have now a plan and we've alleviated what the actual problem is, they're all very, very often, almost always, willing to sit down and apologize, and they know that they did wrong, and communicate that out. And that's an important piece of teaching them how to be successful in the comprehensive schools and in life, is that after you've worked on your situation and after you you're in a good spot, then you have to go and make it right and the wrongs that you do. So that's a lot of what we do with the counselor's help and with teacher's help in kind of a holistic way. There's, we don't react to the behavior at first. We really get to the problem.
In a traditional classroom, say 35 or 40 students, somebody misbehaves, the teacher has to take administration has to react immediately so that the teaching can occur. But in foster care and in your care, your school, it seems that to me that kids with the kinds of problems that come to you have learned not to trust adults. And in order to, once you establish that trust, then you have opened the door to being able to work with them. But that can take a long, long time, and a teacher in a classroom doesn't have that. But you, with your small groups and your different focus, can provide that.
Yeah, there's two things there. One is this is a more labor-intensive intervention and way of dealing with things. And that means that we have three counselors on the time side and three counselors on the bridge side. So we have six to seven. There's another counselor that supervises. But there's seven counselors there for 100 kids compared to, a comprehensive high school might have, three or four counselors for 1,500 kids. So we've staffed it so that we know that it's going to be a labor-intensive process, but then we have that ability to handle that. And the second thing I think is that you really build trust by gaining that experience. We've strategically put in place times where the counselor will meet with the student that's not in crisis, whether that's in the community, but also in school. They have what's called a yellow slip. They can take a timeout when they don't feel right, when they feel like they're going to escalate, when they feel like they need a break. They take the breaks and with the counselors, and they go walk around the school, or they play cards, or they do something that for about 10 minutes. I mean, we kind of limit it so it doesn't get too in the way. But at the same time, they build and foster that relationship so that when they are in crisis or when there is an inappropriate behavior happen, there's already that relationship built, and it makes that process a lot smoother.
It sounds like it sort of gets around the problem of the student who believes that the only way they can get attention is by pushing the button that is their behavior.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things is, I mean, really rewarding that positive behavior when we see it. Oftentimes I think people, they're waiting to catch a negative behavior. We're looking to catch a positive behavior and make sure we reinforce that. And, kids ultimately, Doesn't matter what kids, at-risk kids, you know, our special education kids, you know, normal kids, you know, who get A's and B's every day. At the end of the day, they all want that positive reinforcement, and it's just that you're proud of them and that you care. You know, it doesn't have to be something, you know, something tangible. And a lot of our kids respond to that, particularly after the relationship is, you know, built over time. So
one of the words or phrases that I saw on the website was the term service learning. Did we cover that?
No, we definitely have that component. That's part of belonging. You know, part of the Circle of Courage is independence, mastery, belonging. What we do is we really hone in on every teacher, every student has to do some component of service learning and give back to the community. We put on a whale project every year and have elementary kids come in, and we build a life-size whale where they can go in, and we present we do arts and crafts. We present a lot of facts and things around the whale, and they take pictures, and we send them back with all kinds of projects and knowledge around whales. We also have gone out last year, and a teacher took our students, some of our students, to the library, and they researched, it was their idea, but they researched African-American figures that were really positive role models, and then they wrote books or read books to elementary students around that, and kind of taught a little mini lesson on these role models. So we've also painted, you know, globes or figures on elementary playgrounds, or we do an arboretum, or we grow trees or food and give them to people that need them. So there's a lot of ways that we Meals on Wheels we also do. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of ways that we make sure that the student gives back to others and know that there's people out there that need things, and we can be of help. And not only the student, but the staff get a lot of reward and a lot of security out of that. And the Circle of Courage really shows that that's a component that all of us need in order to stay in harmony with ourselves, is that we need to not just think of ourselves but others. And that's why everyone gets a good feeling when they do help others.
Dan, I've been holding off on a question here because it keeps slipping out of my mind as we go on to other topics. But earlier I wanted to ask you, are there any limitations that you have to deal with regard to learning via computer?
Yeah, it isn't an instructional approach that is different in a couple different ways. The first way is that it's called an asynchronous model. So, for instance, you're not directly asking a question and getting immediate feedback on it. So, for example, there's a 24-hour turnaround time on a question that you may have. And so just by the fact that it's not that immediate, you know, feedback of, hey, I got a question, you answer it right away, it's really dependent upon the learner to understand that they need to manage their time differently. And so, for instance, the student is going to be working independently, and you'll be taking notes on, say, questions that you may have, and then you'll contact the teacher, you'll get that back, and then based on that information, be able to continue to do your work with that type of feedback. And probably the thing that's hardest for a lot of kids at first is they're used to right away, they want to have someone immediately answer their questions. Now, the upside to that is that becoming a good online learner, where you would actually go ahead and spend the time looking for the answer yourself, or not depending on someone, can you just come over here and tell me where to do it, you become a much stronger learner that way. And what we found is that kids that really do put the persistence in terms of becoming a good online learner really become a strong learner overall. And so that's probably the biggest difference that they'll have in terms of how they would communicate. And you do have to do a lot of writing. I mean, you're answering by the keyboard, so you're going to have that skills involved in terms of being good with using the computer.
So you're still doing essays and
Oh, yeah. And actually, the courses are very rigorous. As a matter of fact, one of the things that's a strength about it is that, for example, if you're taking an Algebra 1 course, the course is actually laid out very specifically that that's an Algebra 1 course. And so there, it's not a time where you can get in a situation where the teacher may modify a course because groups of kids are going slower and saying, we won't cover that amount. And, you know, you've heard things, well, we finished the year, but we didn't finish the content. You know, when you finish, you finish. So you're going to complete Algebra 1 when you do the Algebra 1. And so there's some drawbacks immediately in a sense that people feel like they need to have that immediate feedback. However, in terms of learning how to become a good online learner, it really, really prepares kids very well, especially for going to post-secondary school or doing some other things independently.
Okay. In the 3 minutes that we have left, there's one other topic I wanted us to at least touch on, and that is that there are a lot of evaluation systems that are being proposed for evaluating teachers, for evaluating schools, and things such as financing are dependent on that. Non-traditional schools have any problems with that? The evaluations that are done of them.
I'll talk about it. Hillcrest. Maybe you can talk about eSchool. We don't run up against that too much. The way that we're going forward with the evaluations is consistent with others. That's framed around the idea that DPI has also allowed or thought of alternative education as not having the same report card. So when it's reported out, alternative educations are given satisfactory or unsatisfactory or maintaining, I think, compared to other schools which will get like a star rating or a proficiency rating, and they'll have a report card on them that's much more widely used for people to kind of compete or at least have some knowledge of which schools are better than others or at least compare school to school. So that outlines, while we're able to do teacher evaluations, the result is that it's not so high stake.
Okay. Dan, you got about a minute and a half.
Yeah, I would say that the report carding system in which they try to evaluate schools is really it's very simplistic in terms of how a lot of people feel that by putting a report card grade on a school, it really measures all of the aspects of what makes a school work. And so there are some disadvantages for you're working in a school with a lot of, say, at-risk kids in terms of compared to schools that are, say, more affluent or have kids that are a different socioeconomic or racial makeup. And so I think that piece of it is problematic in a sense that I don't think there's really a way that people have really a good handle on how those should be organized. It's an attempt to start it up. I'm not saying that that's not something that should be abandoned altogether, but I think it, you know, as we go forward, it really needs to take a close look at what they're really doing before they're giving a school a failing grade and saying it's based on criteria that may not even be measuring what that school is set up to do or its mission, as you asked in the beginning, of what they're supposed to be doing.
Okay, and with that, that's all the time we have for this week. I'd like to thank my guests, Eitan Benzakian, Dan Tenuta, and Chris Shane. And I hope you'll tune in again next week. Our host will be Karen Sconzert from the Carthage School of Education. And I'll be back in 2 weeks with a program about mandatory vaccinations. I'd like to remind you that all Education Matters programs are archived, and you can access them at WGTD.org. And we also have a Facebook site, which is updated daily with education news and commentary. And you can also interact with us on that site. And that is the web page on Facebook is WGTD:Education Matters. There are a number of Education Matters groups on there. But if you use WGTD:, you will get us. And I believe we're about out of time, so I'll thank you again. And hopefully they'll turn in next week.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
And good morning, everyone. This is the WGTD Radio Theater. And we are on the air in this, our 11th season. And as summer is fast coming to an end, we bring you three episodes of some of your famous and favorite old-time radio comedies. Today we feature The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet, The Great Gildersleeve, and Our Miss Brooks. Today's show is written by Stephen Brown and Michael Ostrup and stars members from the